This is Smart Call with Simon Sharwood on itradio.com.au and callcentres.net.
Hi, and welcome to episode 72 of Smart Call, your regular podcast for the contact centre and customer service industries. In this show, we have two electricity companies with two very different customer service stories. First up, you'll hear Energex's Dale Grant, who was on the very first Smart Call back in November 2007. Dale's back to tell us how the company is getting ready for the unusual customer service demands that come from a long, hot Queensland summer. Our other guest is Samantha Forbes from Energy Australia, and she takes us through the company's new knowledge management systems and explain how they have improved customer service and overall operations. But first, let's reacquaint ourselves with Dale Grant, Contact Centre Group Manager at Energex, an energy company in Queensland. Energex wants to make sure that when extreme weather strikes, its customers can get their hands on information about the company's services and especially about when the power might come back on. Dale explains how the company can get 100,000 calls an hour during extreme weather. Now that's a lot of calls. So the company has put in place all sorts of systems and practices, including some very interesting uses of home agents, to make sure it can keep the public informed. Dale explains the company's challenges as she joins me in this interview.
Well, summer brings with it generally the tropical storms that hit southeast Queensland or all of Queensland. So we're not alone. Our cousins in the far north in the distribution land also have the same impact as us. But apart from the tropical storms, we also have the hot weather as well. And that can also impact on power supply in some way, shape or form. And we might do things like misting some of our power lines to keep them cool so that they don't go out. And customers also get concerned around, are we wasting water, or the mist might look like smoke. And all of a sudden, we get an influx of calls. So we prepare ourselves for the summer season in being able to respond to our customers faster, because we get huge volumes of calls in a very short period of time, as well as being able to provide customers with information about what's going on and when they can expect power to be restored.
Okay, so it sounds like there are kind of two distinct sets of issues. One is that bad weather or a fire or something could knock power out, and the other is people find some of your maintenance procedures a bit unsettling.
Yes, yeah, exactly right. But I think the way we plan is really from the first point you picked up. It's really around the storms or even fire season as well.
Yep.
And unusually, we also prepare for what we call windstorms, and that normally happens in winter. And people can't see windstorms; they can certainly feel it. But that also can cause lines to clang together. So we gear up to be able to answer or respond to 100,000 callers each every hour.
Wow.
And we do that in a number of ways.
Yep.
So we do that by customers being able to reach our staff personally.
Okay.
Also that the customers can get an automated message specifically to their street address. So we pick that up by call line identification and the and match that to the network attachment point of their residence. And then we also do generic messages around postcodes as well. So for this storm season, what we've done is our theme is really about faster response.
Yep.
So we've focused on a few things around what is the faster response to be able to for our customers to reach us faster, for us to be able to get jobs out to the field faster, and for us to be able to give customers updates on what is happening so that they're kept informed on what's happening, what we're doing about it. And in fact, we know that there's a problem in their area, which is the key thing. They're fully informed and they have confidence that we know what the issue's about.
Okay, now to me it sounds like you must have built some very good links between the wider business and your area of operations to make this happen. Can you talk us through how you're getting information, you know, from the field, from the rest of the business, and turning that into these automated messages?
Sure. I think we started following some major storms in 2004 that really had a significant impact on our network and really obliterated the network. And we started building and improving our service offering way back then. And we didn't just treat it as this is a contact center issue or this is a network issue. Mm-hmm. We treated it as an all of Energex. So our corporate communications group, together with the contact centre, together with all parts of the business, whether they were admin services, our control centre, field services, we all formed together a summer plan every year, and it's a major organisational plan. And we all work together on what our plan is, the health of the network, the maintenance that needs to be done, the proactive messages we talk to our customers about in terms of getting prepared for storm seasons as well, having mm-hmm. torches, having radios nearby, those kinds mm-hmm. of things. So every year we actually have a summer plan. It's an annual event, and it's treated very seriously by all the execs and all managers and all staff. So in the customer contact point of view, we started building about 4 or 5 years ago robust technology that could be able to respond to customers in large-scale outages, and we've improved on that each and every year, which is where we now arrive at the capacity of being able to handle over 100,000 callers an hour. And in fact,
that's a massive load. I mean, I've spoken to the ATO in the past, and uh-huh. you know they can't queue a couple of thousand calls. They reckon it would take out Canberra, in terms of Canberra's spare telephony capacity. Uh-huh. What have you done to actually get 100K of calls an hour happening?
Well, we actually use the Telstra. We have a Telstra managed service, and we actually use the Telstra product, you know, in the cloud, mm-hmm. and we're able to bring down approximately 50,000 callers direct to the Energex contact center. We have, mm-hmm. You know, a huge amount of port capacity and server capacity, and we run off two exchanges. So mm-hmm. if one falls over, we've got the other one to pick up, and and we can answer those calls either specifically with a customer service representative,
yep.
or we can give them those specific messages related mm-hmm. to their telephone line and our network attachment point. The others, though, and we're very upfront in this, is we offer them a very generic message to say,
yes.
Energex has outages in these areas.
Mm-hmm.
We're aware of the problem. And you know we're looking at fixing these in X amount of time.
Okay,
so that there is generic messages. At least that gives customers confidence. They know that Energex knows there's a problem, and I know that they're doing something about it.
Yeah.
And they're doing something about it in a specified time. And then I can ring back later and perhaps get a more specific update around that outage.
Okay, so look, let's imagine that you pick up the newspaper in the morning, Dale, and you uh-huh. see that there's a dirty great storm going to hit Brisbane uh-huh. 3 days from now.
Yes.
What do you start doing, you know, uh-huh. perhaps just in terms of agent rostering to get ready for an event like that?
Well, each and every day, 52 weeks of the year, we have staff on standby on a roster. So during the storm season, we have 20 customer service representatives on the standby roster, and then we have a support team, and those support teams may be a manager, it may be a team leader, it may be a senior who provides technical information. It's also a staff coordinator, because we need to know what time people start, what time they finish, do we feed them, do we, you know, provide, make sure that they have breaks, because they may have worked an 8-hour day. Mother Nature tends to bring storms on in the afternoons after you finish your 8-hour day. And you may finish work at 5 o'clock, the storm hits at 6 o'clock, and then you're here through to 3 a.m. in the morning. So this staff coordinator keeps track of how many hours you've worked, and making sure that we keep your hours of work within a certain time frame, and that when you do log off, we also ensure that you don't start work for another 10 hours. So we really monitor that staff fatigue as well, and that staff safety, and assessing whether people are capable of driving home after doing a shift. So that's what a staff coordinator does. And we also have a technology specialist on board, and they're watching all of the queues at any particular time, whether they're being overloaded. It's particularly important for us that all of our emergency calls are treated with the utmost priority, because that means there's a wires down somewhere, and that means that, you know, that is a life-threatening situation.
Yeah.
So we're watching our queues, we're watching the load on them, we're looking at the messages, the automated messages that we're putting on. So we have a technologist on roster all of the time. Now, in winter time, it's not as high as that. We may only have 10 staff on roster, but in summer, every single day, staff go on a roster on a Thursday. So on a Thursday, they come to the admin team, they pick up their pager, and staff know that being on roster, that they're not allowed to drink alcohol, for example, while they're on roster for that week. They need to be within 1 hour's drive of the customer contact centre. Yep. They need to respond to us within a specified time of getting our alerts as well.
Any thought of kind of bringing home agents or remote agents into the picture for this?
I'm glad you asked that question. So this is one of the initiatives that we've rolled out this year. So this year our theme has really been around faster response for our customers. So three things that we've done, and one of those is around what we call rapid response. So now, of our 20 staff that are on roster each week, up to 10 have nominated to be a home agent. And on a Thursday, rather than just picking up their pager, they pick up their pager, they pick up a laptop, a mobile using Telstra NextG technology. And we work with both Telstra and our partners ITA to deliver this solution. So staff can now go home with their little pack, and if they then get the pager, they can then dial in from home and have access to all the same systems that they would if they're in the customer contact centre. The other thing is that they have help assistance just like they would in the contact centre. They'd be able to get advice from their team leader or even transfer a call if they need to. So we put this in about 2 weeks ago on a Wednesday, and guess what? Mother Nature hit us on the Thursday with the storm.
Well, nothing like a good quick test.
Correct. It just so happened that one of our staff had finished work at 2 o'clock that afternoon, so she was already home. And from the moment that we paged her to the moment she was logged in took 10 minutes.
Wow.
Otherwise, it would have taken her about an hour to drive to the centre. And then we had three other staff who happened to be caught in traffic on the way home. But as soon as they got home, they were logged in within 10 minutes. But it would have taken significantly longer for them to turn around and then get back through the traffic all over again to the contact centre. So the test was run within 24 hours, although we'd done significant testing prior to that.
Now tell me, what's the ROI on doing this?
The real benefit for us is it's not necessarily a monetary saving, although there is some minor monetary savings in that we don't need to call in as many staff because we don't end up having the backlog of calls. But the real benefit of doing this is that we can get to our customers more quickly, and we can get the jobs out to the field, and our field can attend to them more quickly, which means customers aren't without power. So the real ROI is around the community confidence that we know that there's an issue and we attend to it very quickly.
Have you measured if this kind of improves loyalty longitudinally?
Well, look, we really only started it last week, so maybe in 6 months' time I'll give you an update on that.
Great. Okay, Dale, well, thank you very much for sharing that really interesting story with us.
You're welcome. Thank you.
That was Energex's Dale Grant. And now for our second interview with Samantha Forbes, Quality Assurance and Training Manager for Customer Service at Energy Australia. We had the good fortune to hear Sam speak at Right Now's 2009 Summit on the Gold Coast, and thought that even though this is a bit of a long presentation by Smart Call standards, you'd really do yourself a favour and have a listen. Samantha explains how the company's knowledge base made training long and expensive, made staff dissatisfied, led to low customer satisfaction. And then she tells us how the company has turned that around into a far happier situation. But as I said, this is a long one, so I'm going to get quiet and let you get into Sam's presentation.
Knowledge management, it's a journey. Some say it never ends, and it's just a continuous loop of improvement. You've heard the saying that it's not about the destination, it's how you get there when it comes to a journey. And, you know, I think that's true to some extent for knowledge management. But I'd go further and I'd say it is about the destination, because your outcomes, they really are important. But I'd go a step further and say it's also about who you've got with you along on the ride. So I'm hoping, just for the short time we spend together today, that I can give you some insights on the journey that Energy Australia has taken and how we engaged our employees at every step of that journey. And that maybe you can take away some different ways of thinking and consider new ways of engaging your staff with their knowledge, with their skills and with their passion to improve and grow your knowledge management capabilities. So a little bit about Energy Australia, the organisation. We're a New South Wales government state-owned corporation, and we were the merger of two organisations in 1995, Sydney Electricity and Orion Energy. We're the leader in providing broad-based energy solutions, including gas, to New South Wales, ACT, Victoria, and also here in Queensland. We operate an electricity network of 22,000 square kilometres plus that runs from southern Sydney through the New South Wales Central Coast and through to Newcastle and the Hunter regions. We have 5,000 staff across the organisation, and we're the largest employer of apprentices in New South Wales, with about 500 odd at any given time. So during the merger in 1995, we ended up with two contact centres, one in Sydney with about 75 odd seats, and one in Newcastle with about 170. So I'm sure those of you who've got multiple sites would be thinking, yeah, I know what you're saying, cultural challenges, how do you get information across to people consistently in multiple sites? We had these problems. Our contact centre actually services three separate internal clients: the retail arm of the business that sells the electricity, and the network business, which actually gets the electricity to the house, and the electrical services business. We take well over 2 million calls a year from residential, commercial and industrial customers. And these relate from anything from general inquiries to billing, to movement, to emergencies and to sales. Our service level target, like many contact centres, is 70-30. So it's a complex business. And I know what you're thinking, like, how hard can it be to move house? And that's what I thought when I first started at Energy Australia. And it wasn't long before I found out that it was actually 98 steps hard. So, where did we start on our knowledge management journey? Well, that was 3 years ago when I first arrived at Energy Australia, and we had a system which we called Online Help, which I very unaffectionately call the black hole. For those of you who had your hands up about a legacy system, then I'm sure you can relate to this starting point of our journey. The number one complaint that our staff had about our black hole was its poor searching capability. So in my first weeks at Energy Australia, as customarily when you join a new contact centre as a manager, you double jack. You go out and you sit on the floor and you watch and you learn and you look. I was sitting with one particular CSR who was really struggling to find some information on how to help this particular customer's query. And she was getting really, really frustrated. And she put the customer on hold and she turned to me and she had very much anger in her eyes. And she said to me, "You know what, if you're going to do something to help us, fix this." And I looked at the screen and thought, what's this? 4,000 records had been returned on her search of meter test. Now, I didn't know what a meter test was at that point. And now I'm still not sure I know what a meter test is, but that's not the point. And I thought, well, maybe it was meant to bring back 4,000 records. Maybe she did something wrong. But what was I going to say then? I was a new manager, so I did what any new manager would do, and I smiled, and I said, "Thank you for the feedback." And I said, "I'll take that on board," and rushed away into my office to hide. So after nagging my poor admin assistant to get me access to whatever system that CSR had been using, I thought, she's got to have done something wrong. She can't possibly have done it right to get 4,000 records. I'll get in there, I'll have a look. So I go into Online Help and I type in meter test. Yep, 4,000 records returned. No particular order, absolutely no logic. So I went back outside and I found her and I said, wow, we seem to have a problem. There's something wrong with the knowledge base. And she looked at me. I said, have you told anyone about this? Have you given anyone any feedback? And she literally laughed at me. And she said, feedback? How am I going to send feedback? If I send an email, no one's going to read it. What's the point? And I, at that point, didn't know what to say. So that's when I thought I need to do a little bit more investigation here, because it seems like we've also got no integrated feedback mechanism in our knowledge base. So how does anyone tell us anything about it? It also became very apparent that there was no quality framework either, because as I delved deeper, I could see that there was people randomly around the organisation updating articles at whim, people I'd never heard of and certainly haven't worked in the contact centre any time recently. There was duplicate articles, there was triplicate articles, there was wrong information, there was variations on wrong information. There was no one person or one team accountable for the quality of this database. There was no reporting, so no one could actually tell me what people were looking at, what were relevant, nothing. All they could tell me was how many articles were in the database. And in an environment where cost savings were becoming more and more imperative, there was absolutely no possibility I could use this in any way for our customers. Probably the most shocking of the entire discovery for me was the fact that there was actually 10,000 articles or records in that database. Yep, 10,000. So this resulted in CSRs and team leaders and quality assurance managers completely stressed, completely frazzled, with absolutely no idea what to tell our customers. So what ended up happening was our customer experience wasn't optimal. And it was at this point where I sort of got this obsession about fixing this problem. I wanted to go back to that original CSR and say, you know what? I fixed it for you. Online help was like the old pair of jeans that we've all got in our wardrobes. Very, very comfy, completely, completely full of holes, and you would never, ever let anybody see you actually wearing them. There are a number of other driving factors, though, that resulted in the contact centre getting its new knowledge wardrobe. Energy used to be considered one of those low-involvement services. I mean, most people in here probably haven't given a second thought to who their energy provider was until very, very recently. Customers are now much more savvy about the energy options that they have, and they're really into things like green energy and carbon footprint. And this has made the market a lot more competitive as a result. Now, our business has had to change, and we've had to bring on new products, green options, campaigns, sales. Our customers are expecting more from us now than ever before. As I mentioned before, I was very bewildered about the complexity of the processes that we had at Energy Australia. And it wasn't just the processes, it was the business rules associated with those processes. So if for different customer types, in our network, out of our network, on a contract, not on a contract, with green, without green, then you get the picture. All of this resulted in incredibly scary, very, very long, 7.5 to 8 week induction programs, which almost always resulted in tears from grown men and women, and sometimes even the trainer. We have pretty strong cost to serve measures placed upon our business, and we knew that we had to start looking at things very, very differently in order to be able to meet these targets. And some of you might be aware that the New South Wales State Government is looking to sell the retail arms of the energy businesses. And so this has been a major driver for change in our business, and we've really had to ready the contact centres for this day and protect the viability of our businesses. So in 2007, a lady by the name of Jane Carruthers joined Energy Australia, and she, identifying those change drivers, initiated a program of work to rebuild the foundations of our contact centres. Before she arrived, there'd been a real void in management capability in the contact centres, and as a result, the unions had stepped in and started managing the people. So for those of you who have industrial climates like we do, that became a real barrier to change in itself. And we really needed to think of a different, innovative approach to be taken to win the trust of our people and embed a real culture of change that would drive performance. So our staff, who were completely fatigued in terms of change, very sceptical, they were intrigued, though, because the way that we were looking at this program of work that ranged from KPIs to knowledge management, it was really different. It was nothing like they'd ever seen before, and it was based on real employee engagement. Nothing like they'd ever seen before. It really changed the way that we approach change in our business forever, and it really created a culture of employee consultation and engagement with open and transparent communications and a clear understanding of a lived mission and purpose. So you can see there was a number of work streams that were run as part of the Project Realise, and one of which was the flexible learning and information channels. Each work stream had a work stream leader who was responsible for the project management side of things, but also was there to mould and direct and guide the outcomes we were looking for. They were also there to facilitate this engagement process, and we did this through what we call design and review teams, or DARTs. So at the heart of the entire Realise program were these DARTs. They were made up of CSRs, mostly, and some team leaders, and what they did was review straw man changes, if you like, and they captured concerns of their peers, and they drove communications back into the teams. They gathered the feedback, and then they directly contributed to the outcomes of the work stream. These people became the most important drivers of change in the business. These people became our change agents. In a typical DART, you would probably do the following. You would have a feedback, or what I like to call the word on the street sessions. You do some kind of theory or demo which related to the particular topic. You do some kind of group-based activity based on the subject matter. So you'd send the group, the larger group into smaller groups with some butcher's paper, give them a task and have them return back with the answers. You might propose a solution or the straw man. And then you'd reinforce the really important key messages you wanted the DART to take back out to the floor. The DART members had responsibilities as well. They had to make sure that they were going to communicate the feedback of not just their own opinion, but the opinions of their staff, or of their colleagues, rather. And also, they needed to follow up themselves if they missed any information. So it wasn't up to us to chase the DART members to say, hey, if you missed a DART meeting, too bad. They had to search that information out themselves. They had to respect the opinions of others. And we had a very highly opinionated workforce, believe me. They had to do what was best for the staff, for the customers, and also for the organisation, and they had to keep their team members up to date with what was happening. Most importantly, they had to promise to keep an open mind, because these changes were big. Staff had to apply to be in these DARTs. It wasn't just a right, it was a privilege, and they needed to actually do this through expressions of interest, and they needed to demonstrate the correct behaviours. So it was really based on their real desire and passion to be a part of this. On top of all of that, we did complete DART communications every fortnight just to make sure that we had a safety net there, and we caught everybody, making sure they knew what the achievements of each of the work streams were. You had to basically be living under a rock if you didn't know about the Realise program. So this was a consultative approach that actually got us through a number of sort of sticky situations with the Industrial Relations Commission. We were able to get in things like call recording when we've never been able to do that in the past. Because EA is a heavily unionised business, and we actually have award conditions that actually mandate consultation, this is more than that. This is more about the true and real employee engagement in letting them decide the paths they want to take and the future in the organisation. The team leaders had a really big part to play, and you can't underestimate the importance of your frontline leadership in these kind of changes. Even though they were part of the DART, they were more. They were the ones that went out and informally influenced people out on the floor. They modelled the behaviours we wanted to start seeing in our CSRs, and they kept that change momentum going and keeping the communication visible and high. They were really, the team leaders and the CSRs, they were really what made for the success of Realise. Now, it is a lot of an investment of time, and it does cost, but the output is really quality, and you have a fully engaged staff in your cultural change and your improved performance. So let me tell you a little bit about the learning and knowledge management art. And these are the guys that were responsible for actually the whole of the knowledge management work stream. They were probably more involved than most art members would have been in their work stream because there was a lot of heavy lifting that needed to be done. To begin with, they actually workshopped the business requirements, and they were pretty clear. It was basically, make it easy for me to find the information, make it quick, make it right, and if it's not right, make it easy for me to tell someone it's not right. It was pretty simple. They were also heavily involved in actually selecting the Right Now solution that we ultimately went with. And Daniel Harrison, who's here somewhere, I think, was actually visited a number of these DART meetings to demonstrate what the software could do for the organisation and what it could do for the employees. We also took them out to Sydney Water, and I'm not sure if there's any Sydney Water people here, but we took them out to Sydney Water and we showed them the reference site and said, look, here, this is how it's working in another government organisation that's a utility. It can work the same way for us. Then they went through the very painful process of reviewing the existing knowledge base articles from the black hole, all 10,000. So it was really more like wading than actually reviewing. But they recategorised them, culled them, made sure that we had the mission critical data in there. Then they helped produce our style guide. So after all, it's not me that looks at it all day, and that's why I asked the question of who uses it as part of their core job. It's not me that looks at this tool every single day, it's these staff members. So they were responsible for choosing the fonts, for picking the categories, for choosing the article types. They also worked with Right Now to customise the screens to being exactly what they wanted with relation to things like quick reference tools, things that they use every single day that allowed them to service our customers better. Members of the DART were also used to author the articles, because I can tell you right now, out of those 10,000, we had a lot of articles to rewrite. So we got the people who got the knowledge, they've got the skills, and they had the passion to drive this change forward and provide their teammates and the customer, ultimately, with the right answer the first time, every time. We also used them to deliver the comms and the training out to the staff for the launch. So these people had lived and breathed the knowledge base tool for 3 months. They were the best people to go out there and passionately talk about it. They also manned a help desk for the first 2 weeks of operation to help people out if they got stuck. They really took passion and they took pride in the work that they did, and they supported each other and their teammates during the transition. And they really advocated the benefits of their knowledge base over asking a team leader or a colleague. They ran playpens, they floor walked, they coached, they promoted the tool, and that's demonstrated in the usage patterns that I'll show you shortly. And you know what? It did. It took a lot of time. It really did. But the results demonstrate the value in the genuine employee engagement that we undertook. Now, on average, you would probably run something like 5 or 7 meetings for a design and review team. But for knowledge management, like I said, we actually had them a lot more involved than that. And really, they were more in control and more directive as to the output that they got than any other DART team. They were really instrumental in delivering the tool, and they really gained a great experience out of it as well. They learned writing skills, facilitation skills, and they raised their own profiles in the business as well. And some of these people actually ended up getting jobs with my team and also other parts of the business on the back of the great work that they did on this project. So on the 14th of July 2008, ARC set sail. We ran a competition in the contact centre for the staff to name the new tool as a bit of a promotional exercise. And the winning entry was ARC, Ask, Realise and Confirm. And I think it worked out just a little bit better than the whole iSnack 2.0 Vegemite thing. But anyway, it all resulted in a what-if voucher going to the lucky winner. So I can imagine what you're thinking. You're thinking all this consultation and engagement, it would have taken forever. And, you know, the quality assurance manager gets up here and says, oh, it's fantastic, it's wonderful. Well, what do the staff actually think? Because they're the ones that use it, right? We run a bi-yearly employee engagement survey. That's how serious we are in continually getting that feedback from our staff. And these are some of the responses we got to the question about the best initiative implemented in the last 12 months. Now, I'm not naive enough to think that when we launched ARC, everybody loved it, because they didn't. And some people take longer to adapt to the new world than others. And even just last week, I had a CSR pull me aside in the contact centre and say, "You know, Sarah, I used to hate ARC." And I said, "What do you mean?" He said, "Well, I used to hate it. But you know what? Now I really, really love it." And I said, "Oh, why is that?" He said, "Oh, it's so much better than asking a team leader, because this thing's right." No disrespect for team leaders. So that was a really heartening experience, where we'd seen somebody who had really resisted the change come around and say, "You know what? This thing is great." I also had recently a new trainee come up and say to the trainer that he'd worked in a number of other contact centres, and those centres had tools, but none as useful as this, and none as comprehensive and simple to use. It's a far cry from the tears of the training sessions we've had in previous years. So I know there's people out there who like statistics and stuff as well, so I've got some of those as for you people. We now have over 30,000 articles viewed every month. And this is all internally, remembering. We've taken it from 8,000 in the first month all the way up to 30,000 consistently. And this is really good news. We're going to see more and more, hopefully, more and more usage as we improve the quality of the information and we add new functionality. No more 4,000 article returned searches. We've got this great tool now with these exceptional search capabilities. And we've reduced our articles now down to only 2,000, just under 2,000. There's no duplicates, there's no information that's incorrect, hopefully, as of yesterday. And, you know, I wish that original CSR was actually still with us, because I'd go back to her and say, "Search me to test now, huh? Our induction costs have seen a real reduction. We've reduced induction costs from the last 12 months by over $100,000, mainly due to the fact that we can train 80-20 now. We could never do that before. We had to train people for every possible scenario because they would never find the answer in the knowledge base. Now they can, and we enable them to do that. So reducing the time actually face-to-face training allows people to get in there and actually try out their job much quicker, much better in terms of adult learning principles. And we get no more tears. ARC's also now our one-stop shop for knowledge. Our back office staff are starting to use it a little too now, and they're starting to view more and more content every day. The inconsistencies we used to have in communications and information across the two contact centres, we don't have that anymore. And we know that because our quality scores have increased and our compliance ratings also. It's very common to be out on the floor in the contact centres now and hear somebody say, "Have you looked on ARC?" We've now got this fabulous continuous improvement feedback loop for our staff. So we're continuing that employee engagement that the DARTs kicked off in every day. We receive about 25 to 40 feedback items every week from staff, and they really believe that it's their responsibility and their accountability to keep that information up to date and accurate as well. We've got a knowledge quality analyst embedded in my business. So there's somebody, well, there's a team, but there's also an individual who's responsible and accountable for the quality of the information out there with our staff and then hence with our customers. We've got reporting, which is fantastic. We're such a long way from where we were before. We now know who's using what and when, what the popular articles are, where the gaps are, and how many feedback incidents that we're getting. Even the SLA on those. And we're going to start to use these reports more and more as we try to continuously improve. Now, that last little bit point there is just a bit of showing off, really, and has a lot to do with the fact that we have this great knowledge management tool now. We were lucky enough to be finalists in the New South Wales Contact Centre of the Year ATA Awards, and I'm sure that our Right Now tool really took us a long way there. And our engagement process was really the reason why we won the Government Contact Centre's Most Innovative People Strategy in the last year. So, as I mentioned before, knowledge management's a never-ending story. There's always more you can be doing, there's always more that you can be updating, changing, adding, And in the next 12 months to 2 years, that won't be any different. So we've really got to look to expand the great work that the DART's already completed. We're going to introduce ARC to the back office, and the back office has its own little culture of its own for their processes. Because at the moment they're using share drives, tea rooms. Oh, there's about three or four different other places, people's emails, people's C drives, for their process information. We're going to use ARC as the hub for our e-learning. Now, we're not quite ready to launch ourselves into social networking on a grand scale, but we're going to be looking at building communities for learning within our own division. So communities of practice, discussion databases, that kind of thing, as well as videos, interactive sessions, and so forth. ARC will be the launch pad for all of that. We're going to do more with our reporting. We're going to know where our learning gaps are, where our learning needs are, and where the e-learning development should be centred. We're going to get the DART back together, as the Blues Brothers would say, and ask them to direct the next continuous improvement opportunity, because it's been our commitment to them that we will always re-engage them back in the process when we want to make a change. So when we look to the customer portal, which I've learned all about today, I'll be getting them back in a room to talk about that. And finally, one of these days, if all is well in the universe, I'd love to introduce ARC to our customers, because that's what's really going to get us to a position where we can actually make workload reductions in the contact centre. And maybe the customer portal can do that for us. So ARC and the Right Now tool have become mission critical systems in our business, and we're continuing to evolve and improve it. So now we've got some swanky new jeans. Apparently those are the Swarovski crystal encrusted jeans. Now that we're getting to the end of our time together, I just hope that you've been able to take away some ideas and some thoughts from our knowledge management journey. And if I can leave you with a few thoughts about how you can use the knowledge and experience of your staff to make the most of your knowledge base, whether or not your staff actually own their knowledge base, and whether a DART could work for you, and how you can better engage your staff right now.
That was Samantha Forbes from Energy Australia, and I should just point out that I attended the Right Now event as a guest of the company. Whew! That's all for the show. See you soon for our Year in Review program. But until then, all the best! We'll be right back.